Hello everyone and welcome to JFG tonight. I'm extra excited tonight because we are speaking to an old friend of ours, Augustus Sol Invictus, who's now been liberated, been cleared of all charges. He is innocent and it's really great to talk to him. Augustus, how are you doing?
I am doing well, man. How have you been?
Great to hear your voice. It's stunning. It's like speaking to someone who's been dying and then resurrected. Really, it's great to hear your voice. I'm super happy to talk to you tonight. What happened? For years, you have been pursued what appears to be false allegations. You have been accused of things, got processed through a whole process of prosecution, imprisonment, all of this to end up in not guilty?
Yeah, I mean, where to even begin? You're not the first person to say, it sounds like I've been brought back from the dead. There was one person who, gave me up for dead and said, when I heard that you were out of jail, it was like you rose from the dead, because he expected me to just be stuck in there. I was stuck in there without bond for a long time. And they thought, he's going to be denied bond. He's going to go to trial and put him in prison for the rest of his life. And basically he is dead already. And, coming out was very much coming back to the world. Like you've come back from the grave. As far as what happened. Yeah. Where to begin? I mean, there's just so much. I would say at the very outset that the people who did this have apologized. And when I got out, I walked out of the courtroom, and the reporter from the Herald followed me out and asked if I had a comment. And I said, I'm giving everyone until May 1st to give me their letters of apology. And the people who were responsible for it actually did, believe it or not. Not the cops or the prosecutors. So I can definitely talk about them, about prosecutorial misconduct, about the misconduct of the police. But, the main folks I can't talk about.
And that was the day of your not guilty finding, where you were, I don't know, my interpretation from your comments to the Herald was that, he's telling people he may go for civil lawsuits, potentially. That's how I interpreted your comment to the Herald. And it's fascinating to see that a bunch of people have selected to take your extended olive branch and have apologized. Hopefully, these people know going forward that their job includes a risk. Their job can ruin the lives of men who are the victim of false allegations.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've obviously, being a criminal defense lawyer, I've seen many people who were innocent and who were falsely accused. I've seen people who were taken all the way to conviction, who were absolutely innocent. I've seen people lose their appeals who were innocent. I have an appeal right now that I'm looking at where, the guy was attacked and they charged him with the battery. You see things like that all the time. It's completely different when you are on what the inmates call the real side of the world. When you are the one under the gun, it takes on a whole new character. The way that the system works and the way that cops get tunnel vision and they get a certain theory of the case and they just run with it and they are just dogged about it. Or the way prosecutors, when they're pressured by the media, they, just throw ethics out the window and they will do whatever it takes to get a conviction. Using people or straight out lying to judges or, lying about evidence, anything to get that conviction. And seeing it for my clients is one thing, but having experienced it is quite another.
When this whole series of false allegations happened, you were on your way to become, if I remember correctly, you came on this show and you were on your way to become a Republican candidate contesting Donald Trump and offering the only alternative to Donald Trump as the Republican candidate. Is that correct?
Yes. And I'd like to say at the outset that, after this experience, I have come to love Big Brother. I have nothing to say about politics. I'm 100% just in the law. But yes, at that time, I was a candidate, not a registered one. you know, we had not filed the fees and all that, but we were doing the campaign at the time of my arrest.
So is it possible that by doing this, you've attracted a bunch of people in the media that wanted you out, that were hungry for you to be out of anything that you could do in the political system, that perhaps the prosecutors have then felt the pressure from the media because of all the smears you and I have accumulated across the years? You know, there's lots of people who hate us. Is this hate, this kind of collective accumulation process, eventually leading to those bad ethics as you've described it?
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. I mean, my presidential candidacy came up at every phase of the trial, except, of course, the trial itself, where that was totally irrelevant to the charges. But every step of the way, I mean, I was denied bond partly because of statements made as part of the presidential campaign. So they would take just random things from the campaign, random statements that were obviously explicitly tied to the presidential campaign, and read it in court to have me denied bond, which, you know, as an American is just unheard of. I mean, it's akin to, and they did the same thing with poetry that I had written. I've written a lot of things. Mm-hmm. So they would take fiction writings, poetry writings, and they read it in court, and it's no different to me. And when they would take, you know, rap lyrics from Dr. Dre or Eminem and try to read it in court and say, well, look what he did to Kim. It's in track 16 of the Eminem show. You know, you can't use people's fictional and poetic writings to convict them in court of something or to deny them bond. But that happened step by step, and it was explicitly tied to my political activity.
This is scandalous, because when you mix up things, when you mix up ideological discourse with criminal prosecution, or when it gets, for example, in my case, similar things have been pulled on me in family courts. And it's a mix-up that ultimately deprives you of your liberty. If you're going to tell me that I'm going to be either in jail or my children will be taken from me because of something I said as part of my political commitment, then I don't have political liberty. And unfortunately, it's the way America is headed right now.
Absolutely. And this is not starting, you know, just this past year or even 5 years ago. I mean, this is something that has been a phenomenon in both the criminal and the family courts for years and years and years, such that there are actually appellate cases on the books about, you know, DC, you know, social services, whatever you call it in your state, Department of Children and Families, whatever it is, where they're trying to use the political opinions or leanings of one person and take their children from them. Yeah. Or, you know, most often, I think, in my experience with clients and, you know, people whose cases I've had to review, it's usually a female, whether just the wife or the girlfriend or the baby mama, a female gets mad at the guy and has totally been involved in his politics the entire time. And then they have a row, and then they will say, hey, this is what my husband slash boyfriend slash baby's father said about Black people or about Charlottesville or whatever demonic thing they can put in front of the judge to say.
And suddenly the very reason for which they wanted your sperm is the reason for which they want you locked up or without 100%. Your children. Unbelievable, 100%. Because they benefit from all the creativity. I mean, they ended up loving you because you were creative in the first place. And eventually they get tired of you and they discard you with the very same reason that brought them to you.
Right. And that's a larger commentary on Western civilization as it stands, right? Like, yes, where we are with modern society, in that we have this welfare state. We have a media that not just enables, but, you know, outright encourages this sort of behavior from, you know, I hate to be sexist, but from women. This is not something that's encouraged in men. I mean, if the media were saying, look, men, you need to turn on the mothers of your children and come to us with all of your sordid tales about your child's mother, that would be horrific to us. We can't even imagine a man selling out his own family or the mother of his children. But this goes on literally a daily basis in this country, where the media will just snatch up these things and put them on the, you know, the checkout counter in the gossip column, and they get paid to do this, to turn on their own family.
We call them hit pieces because they're hit jobs in the end. And some people who are rich enough to buy these, they buy them.
Yeah. And people, you know, love to read them. People love gossip. That's just a human trait. The problem is that our society is now set up so that it rewards that type of behavior. And you would, you know, I get a lot of calls from people just in random places in the country, coast to coast, where they're like, you won't believe the family courts in place X. You won't believe the judges and the corruption going on in county Y. And I'm like, I absolutely would believe it because it happens here in Orange County, Florida. And it happens in every place I've ever been. And every father who's ever come to me with, look at what's happening to me in this, and even mothers, you know, sometimes mothers get accused of things by the government. It's very rarely the husband that accuses the mother, but sometimes the government will come swoop in and make these false allegations, and then the mother's going through the same thing. So we've invited the state into our families, and we do this with domestic violence cases where the police have to come settle arguments between husbands and wives, and the wife feels compelled to say, well, he hit me during this argument. And so the police are the tiebreaker, or we have it in family law cases with custody issues. And the social services or whatever they called in your particular state, or the police will come in and make a judgment on what's going on in the home and how the children's environment is. And you've in doing that and in making that invitation, you've completely destroyed the sovereignty of the parents or the family.
Absolutely. It's extremely dirty how the state seeps in, just slides itself in when it was not supposed to be that way. Criminal law has always had the kind of boundaries that kept it outside of the family, other than for extreme crimes. But with the family courts, the civil litigation system we're seeing right now with Johnny Depp and Amber Heard, this shouldn't happen. A healthy society would relegate this to private decision-making, and yet we don't. We expose everything with the tools of the law, which haven't even been demonstrated to be a good tool to intervene in human psychology and human family.
Yeah, I'm actually reading David Goggins' book right now, Can't Hurt Me, and he talks about his upbringing, where his father would just mercilessly beat him and his brother and his mother, right? And he talks about an incident where the cops came and clearly the woman had been beaten, and the guys all laughed about it because it was, you know, it was guy talk. And the father said, well, she was, you know, she's getting out of line. I had to put her back in line. And this is before all the violence against women and acts and all that stuff. And I'm not saying that, like you said, in the case of an egregious crime where something actually bad has happened, there's been a serious offense, then, you know, that's not saying you're inviting the police into your home to interfere in the marriage. Like, that's addressing a real crime. The problem is that a lot of people will just pick up the phone and call the cops and use them as a threat. And they'll say, oh, well, you don't want to take out the trash, or, oh, well, what about that time you talked to Jessica or whoever? Well, I'm going to call the cops and we'll see what happens with you. And I saw it as an inmate. A lot of times, you know, guys would be sitting there and they'd be like, look, man, I lost my cool. I got in an argument. My girl put her cigarette out on my arm, and I just walked around and, you know, I threw something. And next thing you know, the woman's making up, well, he beat me and he pulled my hair. And what are the cops going to do? You know, they're going to take the guy away.
That's what they
do. And it's not the cops' idea. It's the cops were called into the situation. So we can blame it on the police and the state and the prosecutors all we want, the legislators, but really it comes down to we did this to ourselves.
Absolutely. And as you describe it, there's a full amount of extortion that is happening because we did this. We've opened up the threat of, I'm going to get your kids, I'm going to call the police. And because of this, there's an infinite amount of extortion that we are bound to endure going into the future because we are truly disarmed by the law. We have the law hanging over our head and potentially being used against us in malicious ways, and that makes it impossible for us to play our real role in society, because that you're gonna have to take the trash out if you get that threat. You're gonna have to make decisions that you wouldn't have made otherwise.
Absolutely. And I think the worst weapon in terms of what you're saying is when a court can prohibit a man from speaking to his own children, when a woman can get a no contact order or an injunction against her husband or boyfriend or whatever, based on some allegation having nothing to do with the children, having just to do with the woman, and saying, well, he beat me, or I'm threatened by him, and therefore I shouldn't have to give him the kids. And, you know, the guy then spends the next 6 months going back and forth to court, not seeing his children, begging the court, can I please have contact with my children? And whether, you know, whether the allegation is true or false, they even say, let's say, you know, the guy did hit the girl and the girl has a reason for getting an injunction against the man. That does not mean that he should not see his children, but that's what the law is. If the woman is afraid, then the man can't see his children. And that completely destroys the entire concept of Western civilization.
Absolutely. Absence of due process in those hearings, even absence of due process at the end hearing. You know, sometimes you have the impression that temporary custody is different and they went too severe on you and they're going to save you at the permanent hearing. No, no, no. The system is equally unjust sometimes at the end of the process as it is during those temporary hearings. Very often, those temporary hearings are used to deprive you of your rights temporarily, to eventually crystallize the situation by then arguing, oh, well, he's never seen his children in the last year. Well, it's because I've been begging in the last year to see my children, and you guys have said no.
Right, right. The court will say, and the mother will say, well, he has no relationship with his children. He hasn't seen this child at all.
Yes.
And they have no capacity for self-reflection. Like, well, perhaps that's because we've been preventing this person from seeing the child.
Yes.
It doesn't even cross their minds.
It's,
but like you said, the temporary restraining orders, the theory of that is, well, we're going to apply
de-escalate.
This because it prevents, yes, de-escalate, or to prevent, you know, irreparable harm that could come. It's imminent, you know, they're an imminent bodily fear, right? Mm-hmm. But then, like you said, when you get to the permanent injunction hearing, it's like, well, there's no real standard here. She says she's afraid. I can see she's crying. You know, who am I to judge if she's fake crying or not? She looks believable to me. That permanent injunction, we're going to grant it for the next 6 months. And then it's on the record. It's on the clerk's website where anybody can look it up at any time, and your life is now effectively ruined because you went to a hearing where you expected there to be due process, and it really came down to the judge's whim at that moment.
Absolutely. And then if you're a public personality, they will then quote these findings of a judge who had to choose on the preponderance of evidence basis, one side or the other, and they're going to quote it as fact. So you end up being judged for supposedly criminal actions, but you've never been in a criminal trial and you've never ended up benefiting from the standard of proof of guilty beyond reasonable doubt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of problems in the whole system. One person who was criticizing me for suing everyone, which, you know, obviously I have done and am doing, they said, you know, well, you're a lawyer. Why are you not more respectful of the legal system that you represent? Don't you understand that these police officers and these prosecutors were just doing their jobs and so on? So that whole argument, like, well, the system works, you're not guilty now. And they forget the 2.5 years preceding that. They forget being jailed for 8 months without bond. They forget all the things where clearly the system did not work. Now, granted, in the end, yes, I have to admit, I'm not a fan of the jury system. I think we should go back to trial by combat, but it did work in the end. But all that lead up, it clearly did not work. The system is broken in a lot of ways.
Absolutely. As a reminder to our crowd, if you would like to send questions and super chats, my favorite platform for super chats is Odyssey. Click on the dollar button below the regular chat, or as an alternative, you can go on Entropy. The link is right below the video in the description. So I was reading, I was following your case, and I was talking about it on the show as it was happening. And back in those days, there was the question of whether you would have the ability to be out on bail. And for a lot of months, I don't remember exactly how much time, but for a long period, you were denied bail on the reasoning that it was a violent crime that you were accused of, and therefore you could constitute a danger and a flight risk because of your political activity. How were you experiencing life in prison then?
Yeah, well, let me just say, first of all, that being called a flight risk because of my political activity was just wild. They actually put forward that, well, Invictus has a lot of contacts all across the country. He's a very successful lawyer, and he's done all these great things. Therefore, he's a flight risk. I'm hearing this in handcuffs, like, this is the most insane argument I've ever heard, that because someone is successful, they are a flight risk. I've never heard that argument put forward, but it worked. So I don't even know what to say about that. It clearly happened. It's on record. And I was called and not just the flight risk, but I was an existential threat because of this whole legal theory. And I call it a legal theory charitably, that I was basically Charles Manson with a law degree, and that if I were let out, judges and cops and lawyers all across the country would be murdered by my brainwashed followers. Like, this is actually what happened in February 2020 when I was denied bond.
Wow. And it's differential treatment based on success, and your success is all based on your words. And so in the end, it was a major violation of First Amendment to say, oh, this guy speaks a lot, therefore lots of people hear him, therefore we keep him in jail.
Yeah, I've never heard anything like it. I mean, could you imagine, you know, Trump being jailed and they say, well, we're going to deny him bond because he's got contacts all over the world and could disappear anywhere. It's like, no, just take the passport, you know, put him on an ankle monitor or something. Like, that's ridiculous that you're a flight risk because you have contacts. But going back to your first question, I was denied bond, and part of it was because of the nature of the charges. Yes, but people with those charges get bond all the time. People with major felony, you can get bond if you've committed murder. You have a right to bond unless you are a flight risk or a danger to the community. So there, you know, there was a case just a little while ago, a few months ago, where this girl was on meth and basically had committed carnal acts with her boyfriend to the point where she killed him and he died. And then she dismembered his body and she got bond. You know, it was a $3 million bond, but at least, you know, the judge recognized she is entitled to bond. Whereas, as we were talking about earlier, if it is a domestic violence case, you can be denied bond based on the fact that they think you're a danger to the person who made the allegation, which, when you think about it, really makes it hard for that person to walk that allegation back, because then, you know, you've denied this guy bond. You've taken his liberty. If you dare say that this didn't happen, we're going to prosecute you for making false statements. And that happens all the time.
This doesn't tie you, but my view of this is basically in America, we've converged toward imprisonment on demand for women.
Yeah, I would agree with that wholeheartedly.
And it's heartbreaking because so much history, you know, as a lawyer, the greatness of our legal history. I mean, the principles are out there and the justices of the Supreme Court are capable of laying them out in full text. And you understand them, I understand them, but they're getting shit on by the current world, unfortunately, the modern world.
Yeah, and a lot of what the Supreme Court does, it's very reactionary. It's, well, this has been going on for decades and this is wrong and you need to address it. And they're like, oh, yeah, I guess this has been going on for decades and has been wrong this whole time. Let's make that unconstitutional. Well, let's recognize that that is unconstitutional. the denial of people's constitutional rights based on the accusations of women, specifically in family events, is just, it's wild. It's unprecedented in human history. Well, maybe not human history, I don't know, but certainly in Western history, going back to Rome, I mean, you can't imagine it, or in Christian history, or in you know, the Jewish culture before that. I mean, there are, they insist on witnesses. You know, you have to have multiple witnesses. You have to have evidence to convict somebody of a crime. You have to have evidence or multiple witnesses in order to take someone's liberty from them. That was part of the passion narrative in the Bible, is that none of these witnesses could agree. And that was part of the wrongfulness of the trial of Christ. We've had that concept for thousands of years. And now it's just like, well, hashtag Me Too, hashtag believe women. We don't need witnesses. We don't need evidence. We don't even need credibility. All we need is the statement of this female, and all legal history goes out the window.
Guy from V sends a super chat. He says, where can we get the R.E. Howard poetry reading audio?
That's a good question. So when I got out, I engaged in what is called rebranding in the legal profession or in the business profession. So,
which you have to do in the right wing every 2 years.
Yeah, right. So I completely removed from the internet all of my published works, including my books, my poetry recitations, my literary readings, anything by Lovecraft or Howard or anyone. It is all gone. So now all of my marketing, everything online, you'll see Crime and Punishment, which is my podcast. You'll see my legal website. You will see nothing but law and legal marketing materials, because I'm not getting my fictional works brought up against me to put me in jail again.
Well, it's too bad. Too bad that in a supposedly liberal society, you have to self-censor because things are getting used against you. And I know what you talk about, because I've had to do the same in my life. It's unbelievable that we have to step back on statements that we still assume, but that we know are misunderstood by the current world.
Yeah, it's a sad state of affairs, man. And again, I liken it back to those trials, I'd say in the 2000s, when, you know, Eminem was put on trial for this, that, and the other. They were trying to take rappers to court and say, well, look at these gangster rap lyrics. And they're trying to use these things when it's like, this is not reality. And all of these rap artists had to come out and say, this is not real life. What is wrong with you people?
Yeah. So as a, I mean, there's been a rise on the internet in the interest for law content. And we've seen the rise of YouTube channels around big cases like Cal Rittenhouse. Have you been following what's been happening with Roe v. Wade and the leak from the Supreme Court? Are you excited about this decision?
Absolutely. Crime and Punishment is my podcast. I'm going on tomorrow. I'm going to do a 2-hour episode because I'm so excited about it. I'm doing nothing but the Roe v. Wade case, because this is like the greatest moment in modern legal history, if you ask me, at least in America. Mm-hmm. And I'm having a hard time thinking of a better moment in American history in my lifetime. This is so monumental. And one of the direct quotes from the opinion is Roe v. Wade was egregiously wrong from the beginning. You cannot be clearer in overturning an opinion like than that. So I'm super excited about it. And I was, you know, anti-abortion well before I was Catholic. And it's something that's not tied to religion. I mean, this is just to be a human being. To be pro-abortion is just monstrous to me.
All right. And it's particularly interesting when you look into the history of Jane Roe, and you realize she's been selected by these networks of liars who get paid to get some cases to the Supreme Court. Basically, she responded to an ad that was looking for a pregnant woman that wanted an abortion and who would mount a legal case. So it was all a fabrication from the beginning. Mm-hmm. She has then later admitted that she wasn't raped as she initially claimed. And so it's kind of the problems we're talking about in 2022, they all stem from this initial rise of women coming to courts and basically lying.
Yeah, and it's come out. She's accused her lawyers of having put that in her mouth, saying that you need to claim that you were gang raped so that it will be more heart-wrenching. There were a lot of things that are not talked about in that case. One being she never actually got an abortion. Apparently she wanted to put the child up for adoption. What was the other thing?
Now, you mentioned something very important. I guess you've seen this perhaps even in your practice in other liars. Coaching. The liars are coaching females. They're telling them, oh, you know, your accusation for the guy here is not strong enough. How about you add some salt and pepper to it? And females get coached like this so that they find the exact word that will trigger the judge to say, all right, you meet the requirement. I'm putting him in jail or I'm depriving him from contact with his children.
Have you ever seen the movie Liar Liar with Jim Carrey?
Yes.
Okay, because I love how you say liar with your accent, because it sounds like you're saying liar, not lawyer. And that's what the kid says. He's like, my father is a liar. And the teacher says, do you mean a lawyer? Yeah, whatever. Same thing, right? But yeah, I mean, coaching is not a new phenomenon. It's not something that is specific to this thing, this hashtag Me Too thing either. I mean, unethical lawyers coach their clients and coach witnesses. And this has been happening forever. It's unfortunately just part of the profession. Just like, you know, cops will pressure people to say certain things in police statements. It's one of those bugs in the system that no one has figured out how to get rid of, and which is why we have things like the rules of evidence and we have things like cross-examination. We've been developing these things in the legal profession for 1,000 years now, since William of Normandy conquered England. We've been developing this system of Anglo-American law, and it's to keep out things like that, or so that you can attack that credibility. When it's clear that a lawyer has coached the client, you get to uncover that through cross-examination. You get to dig into them. And that's one of the most important things we have in trial law, trial lawyering, if you want. To uncover the truth.
Absolutely. And another important case that is unfolding is the Amber Heard defamation trial started by Johnny Depp. Have you been following this one?
Oh, yeah. Oh, since day one. And I love it. I love What's every your conclusion minute of this on trial. It's amazing. God bless him. I've watched every witness and it's just incredible. I've never seen such a one-sided case in my life.
You think it's a one-sided case that Amber Heard will lose?
Yeah. Well, you know, legally speaking, there is the question that I think her lawyers have done a good job of bringing up, which is, isn't it true that Johnny Depp had a bunch of bad publicity before this? Isn't it true that, you know, this movie was a flop? And like the Hollywood expert said, well, $800 million is hardly a flop, but they were pointing out some good things about, well, Johnny Depp's reputation was questionable from the beginning. And did he really have these contracts? And really it comes down to what were the actual damages from that op-ed that she made in the Washington Post. But as far as she made this up to defame him, no question. There's no question. I mean, from all the testimony unanimously, except of course, her own self-serving testimony. Which watching her testify is like watching a horrible movie. It's like watching Aquaman on crack. It's terrible.
It is. Terrible. Maybe for you and I it is, but I'm afraid that for a jury, she is convincing enough that some amount of abuse has been happening from Johnny Depp. And with the video that she has where Johnny Depp is drunk, I think that a modern jury will look at this and say, yes, this was an atmosphere of intimidation in which I can believe that someone feels abused. My fear is that there's two fears that I have for Johnny Depp. One, the article that she wrote wasn't clearly saying, neither naming Johnny Depp, but not even saying that it was one of her ex who beat her or something like this. It wasn't making a clear accusation. It was all worded in indirect ways that you could link to her childhood abuse, maybe, or maybe to Johnny Depp. And the second thing is, I'm afraid that a modern jury looks at the whole case and says, yes, Johnny Depp has made some amount of abuse to this woman, and therefore it's not defamatory for her to say that he's abusive.
Yeah, a lot of people are stupid. A lot of people think that, you know, terrible movies are good movies. I mean, there's a reason that we have so many blockbusters that are just god awful. I mean,
there's a reason we have Aquaman.
Yeah. And people rightly fear that jurors are going to be stupid and make the wrong decision. They're going to see someone fake crying like Amber Heard is doing on the stand and think, that poor woman, I can't imagine what she's been through. There is that danger. But as far as the your first concern about, well, she didn't technically name him, I don't think that really matters. I don't think the lawyers can make the convincing case that, well, she could have been talking about anyone, because everyone in the world knew who she was talking about. It reminds me of like cases where drug dealers will talk in code over the phone. They'll talk in code in text messages and they'll think, well, I didn't say cocaine, I said socks, so they can't catch me. Or like prostitutes will say, leave 60 roses on the nightstand. Like, you know, that means $60. Like, then all the cop has to do is come in and say roses is street slang for dollars, or socks is street slang for cocaine. Case closed. Like, there's no getting around that. There's no mystery to it. And likewise, when she says, well, somebody abused, everybody knows she's talking about Johnny Depp, and all they have to do is get up there and say it. So I think they've gotten around that one pretty well. But as far as the jury thinking, oh my God, this poor woman, she's crying and she's such a good actress. Like, yeah, that's possible. Sure.
Yeah. It's a sad thing, but as society becomes less and less intelligent, we'll have to face the fact that being judged by a jury of your peers is a very bad idea. And so I think that my strategy with criminal prosecution is not even to be able to win a case if it was brought against me. It's to avoid any situation in which I can track exactly where I was. I cannot have recordings, so I have cameras around my home just to ensure that at all time I can prove that I was not committing a crime. At this point, it's what you have to do, unfortunately.
Yeah. People want to delete all of their text messages, all of their records, everything, because they think they're going to fall into police custody or fall into the wrong hands. And I take the direct opposite approach, where all of my text messages, all of my location history, all of my conversations, they prove I have done absolutely nothing wrong. I am absolutely innocent of whatever insane charge somebody is going to bring against me. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, at this point in the game, if you have enemies and you are a public person, I think of Christopher Cantwell, for instance, who a lot of people might not like, but wearing a body cam to Charlottesville I wish I had thought of that. I mean, what a brilliant idea, because as soon as he gets there and has this group of his supporters meet in a Walmart parking lot, and I was there, I was physically present at that meeting, and he's wearing a body cam, and I'm like, dude, what are you, whatever. I thought it was weird. But next thing you know, like, I'm leaving Walmart, I'm driving away, and all there's like 30 cops with their sirens blast into Walmart. And turns out some Antifa who knew everybody was there had called the cops and said, Christopher Cantwell pulled a gun on me. But it was on the body cam. Thank God he was wearing that body cam. And that's where everybody is right now. All you need is one fool saying he pulled a gun on me in a Walmart parking lot, and you're going to jail.
Absolutely scandalous. Now, as far as your story goes, so you've been found not guilty, but before that, you had the chance to recover kind of a normal life, or were you always on the stress of this trial? And how was your life between the moment you leave jail and the moment you get found not guilty?
That's a big question. As far as normal life, I'd say not really, at least not in the beginning. You know, a lot of people might not know, I was literally exiled from Orlando, from my own town, from the entirety of Orange County. I was exiled.
Wow.
And so I had to live in a different county for a full year after being released. You know, relations with my kids, restarting my law firm under the cloud of, well, look, this guy's got criminal charges. Mm-hmm. And I had to front to everybody, look, man, like, I've got my own case going on. Like, this is what's that you don't want to, some people I straight up told me, you do not want to hire me as your lawyer. You know, I got this going on, I got that going on. And a lot of people, they would say, look, either I don't care, you're the best lawyer, or actually that gives me street cred. That gives me, you know, real credibility with people charged with crimes.
Yes.
So the first client I got out of jail literally would not take no for an answer. I told him no repeatedly. I will not take your case. And he insisted, beat down my door to make me take his case. And that's how I restarted my law firm. So I did not have a normal life for a long time, but, you know, maybe last June or July, that's when I started winning things. And it took me 6-7 months to win over and over and over until finally, you know, by the end of last year, I did have a normal life again. And then it was just the cloud of the trial. And I spent several months with that cloud hanging over me. But now that that's gone, it's like, I've won everything at this point. There's nothing else to win. Except, you know, I've sued everybody and I have these offensive lawsuits and all these things, but really at this point I've effectively won everything.
So I don't know if you can talk about it, but what's the extent of the offensive lawsuits that you've initiated? It's against who?
Everybody and their mother. I sued
That's my approach also.
I sued a bunch of people here in Orlando for setting me up on false charges. So one of the things you'd asked about earlier about being denied bond, I was actually given bond a few months in. Once we proved a certain charge that I won't talk about, but once we proved that we had 10 cameras across 4 states over a period of 2 days showing this just did not happen, that was dismissed. And then I was given bond and the media blamed it on COVID. Like, oh, well, COVID got this evil blood drinking white supremacist out of jail. But no, it was because we proved this did not happen. It was just completely made up by the police. Mm-hmm. So that's when I was given bond. And then I came back home, was set up all over again by Orlando police. And that is one of the lawsuits, was the second setup, which it's in the lawsuit. I won't say all the details of it, but I was outright set up by the police here for a host of reasons. So I sued them. I sued the public defender's office here. I had the public defender both in South Carolina and in Florida. The public defender down here in Florida just did not do their job. There was a mountain of exculpatory evidence that all the PD had to do was pick it up and give it to the prosecutor and say, this is where this, like you said, I've got all these emails showing where I was. I've got all these people who had my location on their phone. I have all of these people and all of these documents and emails and text messages and screenshots showing where I was at all times. This absolutely just did not happen. And the public defender refused to get it. So wow. I ended up getting extradited.
And I'm guessing you have all these records, but you're trying to coordinate getting these records properly organized from within a jail at some point.
Yeah. And that's part of the reason that prosecutors will have people's bond denied. Mm. It's not because they're an actual threat to the community. It's not because they're an actual flight risk. It's not because they think, well, this guy was charged with domestic violence, he's going to go kill the girlfriend or whoever put him in here. It's because they know, first of all, that you cannot assist in preparing your defense from jail. And second of all, they know, especially when you are in maximum security isolation, as I was, they will break you. Most guys, they do break. And I say that without a hint of judgment or looking down on people, because I've seen it happen in real time. I see guys, you know, about my truck got repossessed. I lost it. I lost my apartment. My daughter can't get to school. My wife is out there banging some other guy. You name it. Any country song you ever heard, like, these guys in jail are living that nightmare mm-hmm. every single day. And they will take a plea. And I've seen it a million times. They will take a plea to something they didn't do to just get out of there as fast as possible so they can go save their truck from being repossessed, or, you know, prevent their whoever, their daughter, their girlfriend from being evicted. And I've seen guys take the accusation and admit it so that they can get out and help the person who accused them from, you know, to prevent them from being evicted or some other thing that's going on in their lives. And it's horrible, the things that go on. And it's prosecutors horrible. Will use that to force people into plea deals.
What's motivating these prosecutors? I'm thinking in the Kyle Rittenhouse case, for example, do they feel kind of invested with a public mission, but it's misplaced? Or are they just evil inside? What's their motivation? Or are they just incompetent?
Well, if you define liberal as evil, then I think maybe there are some prosecutors that fit that bill. But I think some of them are just, they're between a rock and a hard place. Like I think of the Trayvon Martin case, right? Where I do not know the prosecutor, even though they're right down the road. I don't even remember who the prosecutor was. I'm not saying anything bad about this prosecutor for anybody listening. But I would think that in a position like that, like, you have everybody in the country staging marches and calling your office 1,000 times a day saying you have to prosecute Zimmerman. He's a white supremacist who killed this young African-American man, and you have to prosecute him. Like, what else are you going to do? I get it. But then you have people like in the Rittenhouse case, totally different animal. On video, he's being attacked by at least three people. He's running away from them. They attack him, right? It's on video. And you have this guy saying, well, Kyle Rittenhouse showed up with a gun. And if you have a gun, you don't have the right to self-defense, which is, I thought, some ridiculous commentator is putting the words in this guy's mouth. But no, he actually said those things. Like, there are prosecutors out there who would just completely wipe their rear end with the Constitution or any concept of justice or law. And that was one of those cases where this was clearly not about the law. This was clearly politically driven. You know, he's talking about, we got to get Kyle Rittenhouse's address. And the judge is like, these people have thrown rocks, not just through other people's windows, but through this courthouse window. You cannot tell me in good faith that giving his address to this bloodthirsty mob is somehow in the interest of justice. And like, the arguments made in that case were so outrageous and insane and illegal that you have to impute some kind of unethical motive to something like that.
Mm-hmm. Like, so you've been playing Call of Duty, a game in which you kill people, right?
Right, exactly.
This cannot stem from a good desire to find the truth, honestly.
Yeah, it's like, oh, you were charged with murder, and now you've been denied bond. You've been stuck there for 3 years waiting trial. I heard from a cellmate of yours, and we're going to put him on the stand. Don't worry, he's going to testify to this. He's going to say that you read Stephen King novels while you were in there. Is that true? Because that makes you a monster. I can't imagine the evil things going on in your head. Clearly you committed this murder. That's the level of integrity we're talking about here.
Unbelievable. And I think it ultimately boils down to an inability to say no in these prosecutors. These prosecutors should be able to look at the so-called community pressuring them and say no. But of course, their campaigns sometimes are funded by the people who want them to be in a certain way, and they probably get selected to be in a certain way, especially in those cases where a lot of interests are invested in making it racial. A lot of people wanted the Kyle Rittenhouse case to be a case of a white supremacist just killing people from Antifa or killing people from minorities, when it wasn't.
Yeah, I think there are clearly some prosecutors who feel no internal conflict about, well, I have to say no to this pressure. There is no pressure on them. They are part of the mob, and mm-hmm. they are actively collaborating with them. The Rittenhouse case especially was one of those cases where they're not being pressured to do this. They are willing participants in this. I think the Trayvon Martin case is more of the pressure case where they let him go. He was free to go. He went home. It was clear he was acting in self-defense to the prosecutors and the cops at the time. It was only after all these marches and these calls and the media got a hold of it, that's when they went out and arrested him and put him on trial.
Absolutely. Sol Invictus, this was it for my questions, unless you had anything to add to our audience. One thing that I would ask before you go, and I will have some solo news to talk about, but before you go, could you send me a link to this Crime and Punishment podcast? Because I'm really interested about hearing your full take on the events of Roe v. Wade, and I'll be sharing it with my crowd also.
Sure. I will. I'll email you the YouTube channel, because All right. that's where I go live. I don't have a link for the actual show tomorrow, but I'll send you a link to the YouTube channel itself.
All right. What do you retain from all this crazy experience? And you are kind of back to a normal. You are appreciating personal life and enjoying life now.
Yeah, I listen to a lot of Tony Robbins and things like that, where a lot of it is, gratitude exercises and seeing the better side of life and letting go of negativity, all that hippie California, stuff that you see on the television. Like, I do a lot of that, actually. I do my, 10 minutes of gratitude and breathing and all those things. And every day I'm thanking God that I can see the sky and I can see trees and I can hear birds when I wake up with my sons in the morning. Because when you're in maximum security isolation, you do not see the sky. There were weeks I did not see the sky or trees. I did not hear, total, because I kept getting thrown in and brought out and thrown back in isolation. Like, it was a couple months where I didn't see the sky or the sun or breathe fresh air or anything like that. So literally every day now I start off with that. And then, I'm thankful for being able to use a real toothbrush and dental floss, which you do not have. Like, we were issued canine toothbrushes where you put it on your fingertip and you scrub your, it's disgusting. Disgusting. The conditions that we put to inmates in the freest country of the world. So yeah, now I've got my law firm and all my kids, and I do training and jujitsu, and I have a normal life now. So I could not be more grateful.
Absolutely wonderful. And it doesn't take much for time with children to just make you happy. There doesn't need to be an activity. Just being with them is always so great. So Augustus, I'm very happy that you are fully liberated from this torture, and I hope you unleash yourself and you go ape against whoever has been unjust to you. And I hope that people get punished and that the world of tomorrow is a better place.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much, man. And thank you for, I didn't say this at the outset of the show, I meant to thank you for your honorable conduct the entire time. There were a lot of people who either, completely forgot I existed or threw me under the bus when I was arrested. And you were, I'm possibly the only one, but definitely top five of people who just did not throw me under the bus and were actually supportive. And I cannot thank you enough for that.
I saw from the very beginning of this case the signature, I won't say exactly the signature of what, but the signature of an arranged coup against you. And I had no doubt throughout that you hadn't taken a gun to threaten people. It was totally out of your persona anyway. I knew that this was all false, and so at no point have I ever doubted this, and I would have maintained this even if you were jailed. But I'm happy you were not. Thank you for coming tonight, Augustus.
Awesome, man. Well, thank you very much for having me.
Bye-bye. All right. What a great man. It's great to talk to Augustus again, a friend who's been on the show before. Someone sent the link to his podcast. It's on YouTube, Crime and Punishment. The last episode was The Rise of Florida. That's episode 45. I'll be impatiently waiting for the episode tomorrow and his full view on Roe v. Wade. It's been amazing. Augustus Sol Invictus, really trapped by a bunch of people who, to me, looked ridiculous. They looked disorganized. They looked arranged in some kind. I mean, it's you could make a movie about what happened to him. And I could see from the start that there was big bullshit in there. It was all crap. I knew that there were lies. You know, I don't imagine Augustus doing an interstate kidnapping. Are you kidding me? Of someone that didn't make sense. And when you looked at the kind of psychiatric characteristics of the people who were behind some of the attacks, you were realizing that Augustus just got in a triangle of crazies, and he's been targeted by the crazies. And when crazies show up out of nowhere like this, I see the signature of a political, ultimately a political act. Miss Mary says, has JF ever been sent to Canadian prison? Never. I've had a lot of people try to get me in prison. Believe me, I've had a lot of people try to get me in prison, and at no time have I ever been arrested. Because the cases that people were trying to get me in jail for were not crimes. That's the big problem of people. It's like, you cannot get someone in jail because you don't like them, but that's what they wanted to do. And it never got even to a point where even the lowest level police agent was believing anything of the crap that was pulled against me. So I've had fathers of my girlfriends try to get me in jail. I've had exes try to get me in jail. At no point were they ever taken seriously, unfortunately for me, because there are still some very good people in the police who know about what's a false allegation. The big problem of the police is that they are powerless when a corrupt judge puts his hand into it. And when you're stuck with the corrupt judge, that's a totally other domain, because a corrupt judge can make a case against you that is unappealable. You can just arbitrarily say, I will decide to believe her sentence, this sentence. And he can make sure that the sentence that he selects is unappealable, and the appeals court will always say, oh, you know, this particular sentence was in line with the law. Doesn't matter that 50 other of her allegations were all false. This one sentence qualifies, and therefore we will keep the case against this guy. Amazingly, you get more understanding and more intelligence from the police in these nations that Canada and the US are than you get from the judge. The judges are very irregular in their quality and levels of corruption. So now that Augustus is gone, I wanted to just look at some of the news. Of course, this news is what triggered my desire to invite Sol Invictus here. That's all he'll ever get from the mainstream media. A very small publication, just almost privately releasing that, oh yeah, by the way, Invictus, the former Senate president candidate from Florida, not guilty in a South Carolina trial. Of course, the the press, when you get accused, is all there. But the press, when you get found not guilty, is not there anymore. What else did we have? Oath Keepers member pleads guilty to sedition in U.S. Capitol attack. Oh my God, this is going to get the left what they wanted. They wanted to be able to claim it was an insurrection. Ah, now we got this one guy who pleads that, oh yeah, I was an insurrectionist. I've never been attached to the January 6th event, so I don't really care, but let's not forget that there was a pool of people in January 6th, and certainly not all of them were seditionists. But this particular guy estimated that it was in his interest to admit guilt. Binance will be the great cryptocurrency platform, will invest $500 million together with Elon Musk to acquire Twitter. That's very interesting. I hope that Binance is not doing this to knock down the competition, and I hope that they will always use their power at Twitter wisely without crushing the alt-tech movement, because there's a problem when crypto gets centralized with too much power, and if too much power was in the hands of Binance to bar certain subjects of discussion or to lobby for certain TOS rules that would advantage them, that would be dramatic. But I hope that they are taking their investment in Twitter in line with the philosophy of full liberty and full competition in the crypto domain. Pod housing is becoming a reality in San Francisco. I will not live in the pod, but there certainly will be people living in that pod. This is an image of what it looks like. We're not talking about one room. We're talking about one bed. Basically, you have a bed space in your pod, and you can be fully drained of your energy directly by the Matrix. Based says, would be good to do a show where you guys educate how to argue in court and deal with bad tricks, etc. What's a good way to educate yourself? Like, who do you even trust to get that info and stuff? I'd you to go to local lawyers, but they can pick up a phone and call the corrupt ones you are trying to take down. Yeah, basically, my hope of getting due process in court is gone. No matter the quality of your argument, no matter the injustice done against you, there are tricks to look good, and an experienced lawyer will master those tricks. But basically, unfortunately, looking good and being innocent is not enough for certain types of courts, especially family courts. And so I've given up the idea of due process, and my advice to you would be, first and foremost, do not put yourself in situations, avoid at all costs situations where any sort of bringing you in front of the court would be happening. So you have to work preemptively rather than defensively. Working preemptively means absolute cutting from civilization, live far, fence your land, protect your land, live on your land, do not get out if you don't need to, and if you do need, don't search for trouble, don't search for anything. Just get what you need from the world and go back to the private limits of your land. Basically, you have to deprive yourself of free life if you want to survive in the modern legal environment, especially if you're going to be a free thinker, a voice in the public sphere, or anything of that kind. FDA puts strict limits on Johnson & Johnson COVID-19 vaccine. Wait a minute, why? Why now? It's because they've done some research and turns out the J&J vaccine leads to too much blood clots. It's a rare disorder of blood clots, but somehow it's now worth it to put strict limits on Johnson & Johnson. Basically, the vaccine will be limited to people above 18 years old who are incapable to receive any of the other vaccines. Look, we've been talking about blood clots years ago now at this point. And now it's at CNN now. I mean, they've been censoring us. They've even to call it a clot shot, for example, is something that is banned from YouTube and banned from Twitter. But now, I mean, now you have the FDA saying it's a clot shot. So can we say it now? Musk blast Soros dark money groups threatening Twitter advertisers. I hope that at the end of this, Elon Musk becomes fully based. That's how I see the ideal world. Like in 10 years from now, we have a fully based Elon Musk, perhaps even chilling just beside me here, just to appear on JFG tonight. I think it could happen because they're starting to build up hit pieces against him. They've been writing stuff about, look, New York Times hit piece on Elon Musk's South Africa pass gets blowback. The New York Times was blasted on Thursday for running a hit piece suggesting that Elon Musk's childhood in apartheid South Africa made him indifferent to racism and that it could impact his moderation policies. Musk, who has vowed to allow more expression on the social media platform once his takeover is complete later this year, was a child when South Africa was rife with misinformation and white privilege. they now look into the past and they revision the past. So misinformation is a term that has come to fashion in the last 2 years. Because leftists realized that shutting down hate speech wasn't enough. There was some other kind of speech that they wanted to go after, so they came up with the word misinformation. And now we are bound to believe that, oh yeah, there was lots of misinfo in South Africa back when Elon was a child, and we're worried that he's going to carry just this inherent tendency to like misinformation. It's painful. Grapes Coda says he grew up in apartheid South Africa and lived to see it end in ashes. I'm sure he's not indifferent to it. I'm sure he understands why it exists. Yeah, I think that's one of the great fear. Miss Mary says, for fuck's sake, Elon Musk is a psyop. Learn the meaning of the term. Oh, well, Miss Mary, I will not quote this term here. This is your first day on JFG tonight, and it is your last. I cannot... And by the way, earlier she was accusing me of being an authoritarian. I'm not an authoritarian, but I can't keep you here on the chat if you are using terms of violence of a racial nature. Sorry, but it's out of the rule. I have to apply the Odyssey rules. That's it for tonight, boys. Let's see. I do have something that came up on the schedule. I will be debating on Modern Day Debate. This will be... Let me put it on the calendar so that people can see it if they go on the website. It will be on Wednesday the 11th, and it will be capitalism versus communism against a guy named Infrared. Can't wait to hear the good argument for communism, which we've never heard. And then on the 10th, just one day before on Tuesday, this will be the Patreon and Subscribestar Hangout. So if you'd like to join the private conversation, it will be right after the show. It will be at around 9 p.m. Eastern time. So join at the $20 level if you'd like to talk to me. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. And it was a great pleasure to talk to our old friend. And I will see you all tomorrow.